Hello, and welcome to episode number 61 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. In recent years, numerous accounts involving the UFO phenomenon have been made public that contain a broad assortment of bizarre, paradigm-stretching, and for many, credibility-challenging elements of so-called high strangeness, i.e. elements that seem to contradict our consensus understanding of what is possible. Recent books such as Skinwalkers at the Pentagon have helped to turn the spotlight on these co-rising elements of paranormality that tend to emerge alongside standard UFO sightings. Now, some might look at these recent revelations and wonder if perhaps these elements are only now being presented because paranormality has become in vogue, so to speak. In other words, skeptics might look at these recent revelations and suggest ufology has become corrupted by the imagination of our time, as if people's reports have become sprinkled with elements they internalize while watching too much Netflix or something of the sort. But the truth is, these elements of high strangeness are not new, not in the slightest. The truth is that the reason we see more reporting of these elements today is because there is less repression of these elements and these particular encounters by the ufological gatekeepers who historically wanted to present a cohesive nuts and bolts narrative so as to garner the attention and, they hoped, respect of the scientific mainstream. In other words, historically, ufologists themselves often censored elements of high strangeness in the data that was collated. But again, these reports have always existed. Paranormality and UFOs go together like ocean and sand. In other words, not only do they simply coexist together, but they seem to be directly linked in some kind of causal chain, even if the specifics have long eluded the grasp of researchers and theorists alike. The curious encounters of a French man who, in order to maintain his privacy, came to be referred to simply as Dr. X, is a perfect case in point. This case is from the late 1960s, long before the current era's focus on high strangeness. And yet, it has it all. Physical healing, the spontaneous appearance of triangular skin marks, memory manipulation, future casting, poltergeist and hitchhiker effects, multi-generational impacts, etc. What are we to make of this bizarre menu of elements that seem to effectively turn on their head almost all of our modern notions as to how reality is supposed to unfold? Do these elements merely demonstrate the impressive capabilities of a more sophisticated extraterrestrial intelligence? Or do they perhaps provide hints regarding an origin for some of these mysterious others that flies in the face of the standard hypotheses put forth to make sense of this phenomenon? These are the very matters we'll seek to explore in this, the 61st episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. Now, as we consider this case, the case of Dr. X, I want you to keep in mind other cases we've discussed. What do the cases have in common and what elements are different? And overarchingly, how are we to make sense of these encounters, considering they often fly in the face of our mainstream physicalist interpretation of what can happen in reality? Whenever we discuss the specifics of these particular cases, my goal is for all of us to keep in mind the overarching questions. What is this saying about reality itself and our conception of it? Now, one of the reasons why I like this case is because it has many of the elements of high strangeness that are so often front and center in this phenomenon. But even more specifically, I like this case because it has been vouched for and researched by people like Jacques Vallée and his colleague, Amy Michel, who was actually the person who interacted with Dr. X specifically when these events happened in the late 1960s. So let's get right to this case. Here's the general overview. In the fall of 1968, a 38-year-old French physician observed two luminous objects outside a window, and they later merged into one object. Now, these very specifically looked like objects, actual three-dimensional objects in the sky, not just lights. Then they disappeared from the scene after they had merged into one in a flash and a puff, as it were. But we'll get to that. Now, interestingly, one of the effects of this encounter was that this physician, this Dr. X, was healed of not one, but two serious injuries following his encounter with these UFOs, and subsequently experienced years of anomalous experiences that seemed linked to this initial sighting. Now, as I said, this account is documented by the famous French ufologist Amy Michel, who was a colleague of our favorite ufologist Jacques Vallée. Now, I already mentioned that there are healings involved in this case. Specifically, Dr. X had muscle problems and a limp in one leg following the suffering of an injury which involved him stepping on a landmine during the Algerian War a decade previous to this encounter with this UFO. His second injury was much more recent and was the result of a self-inflicted injury to his ankle as a result of an axe slipping while he was cutting wood, resulting in swelling and a fairly serious hematoma. Thus, he found walking and even standing difficult at this point, just prior to this encounter. Okay, so that sets the table. Now let's get to the encounter itself. Just several days following the wood chopping accident, Dr. X awoke to the sound of his young son calling him from his bedroom. When he went to investigate, he found his son jumping up and down excitedly on his bed, pointing towards the window while mentioning something about a bright light. Outside, a storm was raging at this point, with heavy wind and rain, and what the doctor first assumed to be flashes of lightning. However, later, in reflecting on the incident with Amy Michel, the doctor realized that there were no corresponding sounds of thunder that would have been present were these flashes of actual lightning. The flashes also seemed to appear at intervals, suggesting something more than random atmospheric phenomena. In other words, they happened regularly, on a schedule almost. Now, while up, the doctor heard what sounded like a shutter that had come loose in the storm. So after tucking his son back into bed with a glass of water, he went to investigate this slamming sound where he thought a shutter was slamming against the house. Perhaps it had come loose during the storm. While he went to investigate, he saw through the window that these flashes of light were happening again, like I said, regularly, and he realized it was at about a 1 second interval, and it appeared to be the same color as that of the full moon. These flashes would extend for about 2.5 miles. However, no source for the light flashes was seen. He then went downstairs to pour himself a glass of water and noted at that time that the kitchen clock read 3:55 a.m. Then, looking out his twin French windows in his living room, the doctor spotted two identical luminous objects hovering over the valley, just over a mile away. Now, they were moving in an eastward direction, each shining down a bright spotlight to the ground below. At this point, he was seeing them in profile, at which point they appeared elliptical in shape, with two distinct parts for each object. The upper part was colored white, almost like the color of the moon, while the lower section was a deep red. Each object contained three antenna-like protrusions, one vertical and two horizontal, stretching to the right and left of each object. The lower section also seemed to have a distinct bulging section from which the beams of light originated. Again, he's thinking of a mechanical kind of object here. As the flashes of light were absorbed through the antenna of each object, another flash passed between the two objects, leading Dr. X to surmise that perhaps the craft were drawing electrical energy from the atmosphere around them, refueling, as it were. That's what it looked like to him. Now, eventually, the two objects moved closer together until they seemingly merged seamlessly into a single object of the same general shape, but now larger. From there, the doctor was surprised to find the now single anomalous object approaching him. It started moving towards him, and eventually it stopped only a few hundred feet from where he stood, watching in awe. From this closer vantage point, the doctor felt he could discern a metal-like superstructure, at least from the bottom section of this UFO, and he sensed that the metal was lit from within. He also noticed different sections, 11 sections, in fact, in total on this object, as well as moving lines along the outside of the object. Then the object tilted on its side suddenly and simultaneously directed its large energy beam directly onto the doctor. He was immersed in this energy beam as this object over top of him tilted to its side. Then, to the doctor's shock and surprise, as if he wasn't already shocked and surprised, a loud booming, cracking sound was heard to mark the moment when the UFO seemingly dematerialized, that's the word he used, dematerialized, instantaneously, leaving behind a cloud which quickly floated away. He could then see what looked to be a thin luminous line that extended from where the UFO had been to a point of light far, far above, presumably the new location of the UFO, suggesting it had moved away at an incredible rate of speed. He then heard a second crack or bang, and all trace of the object was gone. Now back inside, still in a state of shock, the doctor noted that the kitchen clock now read 4:05 a.m. Remember, earlier on, he noted it said 3:55 a.m., so not that much time has elapsed, only about 10 minutes. Now, because he didn't want to forget a single element of what he just experienced, this is like nothing else he'd ever experienced in his life, of course, the doctor immediately took out some paper and began taking notes and drawing sketches of the objects and object he had seen and heard. Next, he went back up to his bedroom and awoke his wife to share the experience with her. Seeing him, she immediately noticed that he was no longer walking with a limp. Now, when he examined his leg, he was shocked to see that his injury had virtually disappeared, leaving only the faintest scar, and the swelling and pain had completely and suddenly subsided. Remember, he had two injuries, one that he endured during the war, which led to his limp, and a more recent injury where he injured his ankle with the axe. Both of these injuries were completely healed. He walked without a limp, he had no pain, he had full muscle function for the first time in a decade since the time he had the accident in the Algerian War. Now, after their excited conversation, he and his wife, the doctor finally calmed down enough to fall back to sleep. But then, of course, it was into the morning hours of the next day. It was at that time that his wife heard him, for the first time she could ever remember, talking in his sleep. Now, he said many things, but one distinct sentence struck her when he was heard proclaiming, "Contact will be reestablished by falling down the stairs on November 2nd. Let me say that one more time. She heard him say in his sleep, "Contact will be reestablished by falling down the stairs on November 2nd. Now, perhaps she thought this was gobbledygook, nonsense. Doesn't make a lot of sense out of context. It will make sense once you hear what happens. Now, the doctor continued to sleep well into the next day, into the afternoon hours indeed, and his wife continued to hear him talking in his sleep throughout those hours of sleep. The next day, when he finally did awake, his wife bridged the topic of the previous night's slash early morning UFO encounter. Now, what's weird here is, at this point, the doctor looked at her dumbfounded. He had no idea what she was referring to. Perplexed and somewhat worried, she showed him the notes and drawings he had made the previous night. We're talking only one night previous, before he went to sleep. At that point, the doctor's jaw dropped, because he recognized these drawings and these notes as being his own handwriting. But he had no recollection at all of making the notes nor the events which inspired them. Then, as it turns out, his sleep talk that I mentioned and that strange phrase he muttered turned into a form of precognition, future casting. Because later that day, he did indeed fall down the stairs leading into his living room, and he banged his head on the ground. And upon doing so, suddenly full recall of the UFO encounter came back to him. He remembered everything suddenly. Everything that his wife was saying suddenly made sense because he could remember it again. And of course, that completely suggests that what he was muttering in his sleep ended up coming true. That the contact, or in this case, recall of the event, came back to him when he hit his head. Now, it's important to note here that his wife had not told him about what she'd heard him saying in his sleep. So he had no notion of this suggestion that falling down the stairs and then banging his head, as it turns out, would create this recall. It was only after the fall down the stairs that she was struck by the coincidence and decided to share what she had heard him saying in his sleep the previous night. By the way, the doctor described feeling as if an invisible hook had manifested between his leg and that caused his fall. So he's basically tripped by some sort of physical manifestation between his legs that made him collapse. Very, very strange. Now, at the urging of his wife, the doctor decided to contact famed French ufologist Amy Michel, who we've already mentioned, a colleague of Jacques Vallée. Now, upon arriving at their house 3 days later, Michel noted that the doctor seemed still to be in a state of ontological shock regarding the nature of his experience. Again, this was 3 days previous now. Again, this is not surprising. So often this is front and center with this phenomenon. People are struck by how something has seemingly happened to them that they know happened. They know it's not just delusion. And yet it doesn't fit with our understanding of what can happen in reality. Thus, people feel this strange cognitive dissonance. Now, while his leg and muscle injuries were completely healed, on this day, the doctor began to feel a cramping pain around his navel. So this is a new physiological symptom he suddenly started feeling when Amy Michel arrived on the scene, again, 3 days after the original sighting. Now, this sensation on his navel eventually evolved into an itching and a prickling sensation. Then, on November 13th, the doctor had another dream in which he saw a triangle appear along with a UFO he had seen previously. Now, soon after, that pain on his navel, that prickling feeling, that itching feeling, resolved into the shape of a perfect isosceles triangle that was visible on his skin to himself and everyone else. And this looked exactly like the object he'd seen in his dream, the triangle he had seen in his dream alongside the UFO. At this point, there was no more pain where the triangle appeared, and when he saw a dermatologist, he had no explanation. Now, Michel, a pragmatic man, suggested perhaps the mark was of psychosomatic origin. In other words, he was causing it with his mind somehow by worrying about these things or something. But then, to everyone, including Michel's surprise, an identical mark appeared in the same location on the couple's young son the very next day. This was the same son who had first awoken the doctor after having seen lights outside his window. Now, for 2 years following this, this strange biological mark manifested on the doctor's body about every 3 weeks, and would then show up on his son approximately 12 hours later. The marks would then fade later. This actually continued to happen, though less regularly, for the next 20 years. So when we talk about people having paranormal effects after these kinds of encounters, in the case of Dr. X, it went on for decades. Now, on top of that, various bizarre synchronicities continued to arise in the months and years following that initial encounter. One particularly strange one involved Amy Michel and the doctor. Michel had a particular melody that wasn't all that familiar to him beforehand stuck in his head on this one particular week that winter, the same time frame as when the initial experience happened. Now, when Michel met up with the doctor after the doctor had been through a hypnosis session, he noticed the doctor seemed tense and he suggested that the doctor play piano, which tend to calm him down, and he was a very accomplished pianist. Now, the doctor agreed, and acting on the suggestion, proceeded to start playing this very strange melody, the same one that had been stuck in Michel's head all week long. Now, Michel had no other recollection of having heard that tune during the time period leading up to this strangely synchronous event, but the doctor, Dr. X, who had not been around Michel that week, said he'd been practicing that song all week long. So notice the synchronicity here. These two were not together. And yet, on the one hand, Dr. X was practicing this song on the piano, a song that was not known to Amy Michel. And separately, in a different location, Amy Michel was surprised to find this melody kept coming up in his mind all week long, the same time frame as Dr. X was practicing this song. And then when they got together, To his surprise, Amy Michelle finds Dr. X playing this very song on the piano. That's exactly the kind of synchronicities that happen in this case time and time again, and tend to happen with this phenomenon time and time again. Even people who had no experience with a UFO or alien beings or anything of the sort can still get drawn into it merely by being in contact or association with the people who did have the contact experience. Now, here we should make clear that this kind of synchronicity did not just happen between a doctor and his wife and someone like Amy Michelle, but various people that the doctor and his wife knew began to experience strange synchronicities around them or in connection with them. And again, here we're reminded of more recent events depicted in a book like Skinwalkers at the Pentagon, which I mentioned in the introduction, having to do with what has been termed a kind of social contagion, where it appears that even being socially linked to someone who experiences a UFO or co-arising anomalous phenomena can seemingly become the triggering event which spreads to others. Now, we might ask, is this a form of energy now associated with the individual that can be caught, as it were? Or is it perhaps even a kind of biological contagion, like a virus? There seem to be cases where people even who haven't been in actual physical proximity can still catch this from each other, suggesting the social connection alone can become the pathway through which this contagion can and does travel. So let's make that really clear. In Skinwalkers at the Pentagon, we have cases where someone would see a UFO or a skinwalker or some sort of strange entity while on the ranch in Utah and then fly back home. And then relatives, friends, and associates, colleagues of these people who had these initial encounters would then begin to experience high strangeness themselves. Sometimes it was the sons, the daughters, the wives, the husbands, sometimes even cousins or people that lived on the same street. Again, it seems that it's not just having been in actual physical proximity, like how you would pass a biological virus, but that even somehow the social connection or the mental overlay, we might even say, between these people, the consciousness of these two people was enough for this kind of viral entity to pass over from one person to another. Now, the implications there are certainly no less than paradigm shattering. I'm sure you'll agree. Again, for many, it's just too bizarre to reckon with. Many will just reject it out of hand because, again, it flies in the face of what we understand can happen with reality. And yet, as I've said numerous times on this podcast, that's not how we should make sense of these things. We don't exclude data or ignore data or repress data, certainly not delete data just because it doesn't fit with our prevailing paradigm. If there is outlier data that seems to question our notion of reality, we should let it be. We should collect more and more, and perhaps that will lead to a revolution of sorts in terms of our understanding of what reality actually is. More on that later. Now, the doctor and his wife also experienced strange electrical surges and outages in their home following this event. And strangely, when the electric company was brought in to investigate, while they too noticed the anomalies, they could find no source for the arising of these anomalies. The electricity would go on and off, seemingly arbitrarily. They couldn't make heads or tails of it. And one of these electricians that worked for the government entity that was investigating this said, believe it or not, that they believed the house was probably haunted and the couple should just move. Now, the doctor and his wife also noted various poltergeist phenomena, including various household objects that seemed to randomly move by themselves, or they would find them in places that neither one of them moved them to. In addition to that, an old mechanical clock started behaving strangely, falling several hours behind on occasion. Now, this next element is truly shocking and surprising, and again, many people will reject it outright because it goes against our normal understanding of what can happen. But before I share it, I want to remind you that before these incidences, before this initial encounter with these two UFOs that turned into one, this doctor was a straight-shooting, mild-mannered physician who didn't look for attention. He was known for his clarity of critical thinking skills and a lack of fanciful imagination. This is not the kind of person that makes this stuff up or even thinks about it or is even interested in it. We need to remember that because people often assume this is just happening to people who tend towards these things already. They do not. Often it happens to people who've never even thought about these things, never considered them at all. No contemplation beforehand whatsoever. That was certainly the case with Dr. X and his wife. This is what happened. On numerous occasions after the incident of seeing the initial UFOs, he reported incidences of spontaneous levitation, where he would float 20 feet or more into the air. And in one specific case, he happened to have flypaper stuck on his hand, and when he levitated to the ceiling 20 feet up, he took this flypaper and stuck it to the ceiling so he could show it to Amy Michelle later on. So again, just try and imagine this person who is mild-mannered, not prone to this kind of thinking, not prone to talking or thinking about UFOs at all, certainly not thinking about paranormality. And suddenly, after an encounter like this, he's doing things like floating up to the ceiling. On another occasion, later on, he started hearing a voice that on numerous occasions informed him that something anomalous of significance would happen on the one-year anniversary of that initial encounter. Now, because of this, the doctor and his wife invited Amy Michelle and his wife to spend that anniversary evening with them. And at the same time, he had their young son taken to the grandparents' house. So the young son was at the grandparents' while Amy Michelle and his wife came to spend the evening with Dr. X and his wife on the one-year anniversary of that initial sighting and encounter. Now, upon arriving at the scene at the house, Amy Michelle asked if there were any unusual markings on the doctor's body at that moment to mark the occasion, so to speak. The doctor showed him there were not. However, later that night, sensing something coming over him, the doctor stood up, saying, "It's here, it's beginning again." And upon lifting his shirt, they could all see a precisely defined triangle trace itself that very moment onto the surface of the doctor's abdomen. Again, at that very moment. And earlier on, when Amy Michelle looked, there was nothing there on the abdomen. It happened in real time while they were all there. And very importantly, the doctor sensed it. He sensed something coming over him just as it began. And that's what made him stand up and lift up his shirt to begin with. Again, shocking and fascinating. Now, interestingly, even though they had sent their son to spend the night with the grandparents, like I said, they later found out that the very same mark had appeared yet again on the son's abdomen, even though he wasn't even at the same location, of course, as the doctor and his wife. The grandmother was actually quite distraught because she noticed this mark on the young boy and wondered what was going on. Now, interestingly, while the doctor didn't recall alien beings or abductions, like they're often depicted, his son experienced insomnia of a pretty extreme degree following this most recent case of the triangle mark on his body. And he was known as often telling his classmates that at night he would go off into the big red machine in the sky, the one that made the loud noises and the flashes of light. So even though the doctor himself doesn't remember being abducted or taken into a craft, the son clearly is having experiences that suggest that is what is happening, that a more classical abduction case is happening with the son. So once again, as I mentioned in the introduction, we have a multi-generational incident here. This is very common that this happens across bloodlines, sometimes over 3 or 4 generations at this point. Now, we've often discussed the matter of how these seemingly otherworldly events change people. In the case of the doctor and his wife, they went on to develop a renewed appreciation for life and its deep mysteries. And they both became deeply spiritual people, both coming to recognize the great wonder of it all. And while he was initially set back by the ontological shock, he was quite put off by the experience. They both began to eventually come to see it as wondrous, and they were okay with not fully understanding it, but they knew it was somehow something awesome, amazing, and world-changing. And of course, we should not forget that he was healed pretty profoundly as a result of this experience. Now, in a much later interview, the doctor also described being sometimes visited over the years by a man who never seemed to age. So he would see him only after numerous years had gone by. But even though the doctor had aged, this man he met up with never seemed to age. And after his encounters with this mysterious figure, the doctor would note that he had experienced missing time. Again, of course, another common data point of the UFO abduction phenomenon, even though some elements don't completely line up with what we think of as abduction. Now, as I mentioned, Amy Michelle was the person who documented most of this case. It became well known because Jacques Vallée picked up on the case. He recounted the doctor's case in Passport to Magonia, as well as in later books, and it's because of this that this case has become part of the worldwide ufological lore, even though often it's not spoken about as much as I wish it was, because it truly is an outstanding case. It's well documented, it was looked into by very credible ufologists, and we have all the elements of high strangeness happening in one encounter. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, while many people might assume, skeptics might assume, that the more paranormal elements of these more recent encounters are perhaps a byproduct of overactive imaginations who've consumed too much sci-fi, cases like this remind us that this has been happening for a very long time. As long as ufology has been a thing, these kinds of events have been going on that involve elements of high strangeness. And of course, following the work of people like Jacques Vallée, we're very aware that this kind of thing's been happening long before modern ufology. That when we look at fairy lore, when we look at religious experiences, many of the same elements are in play. So perhaps this is pointing to something that's been going on all along, basically as long as our species has been around. Now, when we step back and reflect on this case, while some of the details are unique, many of the key data points are quite familiar. Missing time, memory manipulation, physiological effects, time distortion, future telling, healing, contact that reaches across generations in a single bloodline, poltergeist phenomena, synchronicities to the extreme, and even paranormal social contagion, like we talked about. We also see, as I just noted, that people are often forever changed by these encounters, and seemingly not just because they're so bizarre, but also because they often seem to have a built-in element of primarily spiritual, existential relevance. So much so that some have suggested that these effects are perhaps more important than the phenomena that gave rise to them in the first place. On the other hand, in a case like this one, we see evidence of craft that seem to show evidence of an advanced kind of seemingly nuts and bolts technology, with energy-absorbing antenna and the like. And of course, this too is not all that unique. Again, with this phenomenon, we frequently see the collapse of our usual categories of understanding, where terms of differentiation, like spiritual versus technological, seem suddenly misguided and insufficient in their usual function. If nothing else, with this phenomenon, we frequently see evidence of both and rather than either or. Now, ultimately, what I would suggest to you, as I have been for some time now on this podcast, is that the implications arising from revelations pertaining to the UFO phenomenon and forms of high strangeness beyond that are pointing squarely to reality itself, and more specifically, to our conception of reality. I would suggest to you that it's not just our convenient distinctions, like technological versus spiritual, that are faulty, but more generally, even differentiations around physical versus mental. I would go so far as to suggest that what this phenomenon is telling us is that reality itself does not exist as we think it does, and that it is actually not really primarily physical at all. In other words, what we have is gradations of what you might call mind stuff, though that will require some unpacking in the weeks and months to come. But I'm referring generally to overlapping waves of what you might call mental experience, suggesting our reality is more like a shared collective dream, which is stubbornly convincing as primarily physical because we experience it that way. And because we've framed it that way for so long now that it's become ubiquitous. Of course, a dream feels fully physical when you're within it, because that is what dreamscapes are, fully immersive world spaces. Now consider this. Just as an alarm clock or the sound of running water coming from outside a dream can impact the world space within the dream, like you'll suddenly think you're by a stream when you hear water coming from outside the dream, so too can these others, it would seem, enter into our shared dream space, our world, and manifest qualities within it, even qualities that are fully quantitative and thus measurable, like solid objects. What I'm referring to here is a model of reality known as metaphysical idealism. And not only do I think it best fits with the data we've seen arise from the UFO phenomenon over many decades now, but I also think it clearly makes the best sense of converging streams of evidence arising in other fields, such as neuroscience and quantum mechanics, as I've touched on before. Now again, this is a lot to digest. Rest assured that we will be breaking this down in the weeks and months to come. So bear with me, there's a lot to get to, and much of it, while very well supported in terms of evidence, does often fly in the face of the way we've been raised to think about reality. But this at least gives you some sense of where we're headed and some sense of what terrain we'll be traversing as we continue to pursue clarity in this most thorny but enthralling of topics. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian, signing out.